All right, you're back in the DFSR. It's an NFL podcast. It's Saturday. It's December 29th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
Coming to you a day later on our game-by-game breakdown. As with the holiday traveling through our podcasting schedule, a little in the flux, which is to say we didn't do any podcasting besides this one this week, but that's all right. We're going to cover week 17 in the NFL, breaking it down game-by-game for FanDuel and DraftKings. Buddy, but before we get started, how was your holiday? Because we kind of caught up here at the beginning of the, before we jumped on the podcast, but I think the listeners are interested to know specifically how your holiday was.
Yeah, incredible. I'm glad you asked. I didn't set you up for this, but it was a life-changing Christmas for me. Santa was outrageously kind to me this year. He got me just $500,000. It was awesome.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was really nice. I was like, whoa, Santa, jeez.
I didn't even think to put that on my list, which is like, feels
yeah,
like...
Yeah, that was the thing. Yeah, a lot of people don't realize. It was good. We travel a lot. I mean, for me, I don't really... It's tiring for me to like sleep over people's houses and like do the presents thing. So my kids had fun. That's all that really matters to me. And I'm very, very behind on my work. So that's basically how my holiday was. How about you, buddy?
Yeah, buddy. Well, I think I'm dealing with an Alexa in the house. So everyone just screams at Alexa now to do everything. And I was talking to you.
Too.
I was telling you the story. Oh, I just said it right now. And it's going off in the background because I'm not used that you can't say the stupid name. It's actually going back and actually wanting to answer stuff for me now on the back of the podcast. So I'm going to need Alexa pause. All right, so there you go. That's a good podcast. I wish I could say that was planned, but it wasn't. This is kind of the hell I'm dealing with right now. 2 years later than everyone actually got these. All right, let's roll through game by game breakdown for what we can kind of expect on FanDuel and DraftKings. Week 17 is always an interesting one in the NFL because we have teams with nothing to play for, some that haven't had anything to play for in a long time and are still kind of playing for something. We have playoff picture teams. With some backups kind of playing. It's a crazy week. There's a reason that season-long fantasy doesn't go into week 17 because there's too much upheaval in terms of motivations. But I think we have a pretty good handle this week on... We have a good handle on A, teams that have something to play for, and there are enough. And there's enough good ones, too. I think, and that's going to be an important kind of caveat to this whole thing. There's enough fantasy-relevant teams that actually have playoff relevance going into it. And then there's some teams that have signaled that they're just going to keep trying their hardest. And they've been doing this for a while, even though their hardest has been well below par in terms of what the NFL can come to expect. But I think we can figure out the opportunity and we'll roll through some of the injuries as well. Let's start off Dallas and the Giants. Now, this one is interesting because the Giants are favored at home against Dallas. Dallas has said that they're going to play everybody the whole game. And which is a very Dallas-y thing to do because Dallas doesn't have anything to play for. So Vegas does not believe this to be the truth. Vegas has the Giants as 6-point favorites at home against Dallas, which signals that like they think that these guys aren't really going to play. What do you make?
It signals insider information is what it signals. I have a hard time believing anything other than the plan is not to play the Dallas guys. Vegas tends not to stick their neck out in situations like this without some information. And I can't even count the number of times where a line has looked weird. We're like, what's with the Packers, you know? The coaches say Aaron Rodgers looks good, and then he just doesn't play, right?
Right.
Whether it's the Vegas setting the line themselves, some sharp having insider information, whatever the case is, this line to me just screams stay away. The worst thing, I wrote this up in the cash game article this week, which is always the hardest cash game article to write all season long, but the amount of just random stuff that can happen in week 17 is off the charts. Like, you just lose Ezekiel Elliott for the second half, good luck. You know, like, it's just, you just have no idea. And if you can prioritize players in games that matter or in such good spots where maybe it doesn't matter, then that's what I'm hoping to do. So, you know, we've been pretty high in Dallas the last couple of weeks. It hasn't especially worked out that great anyway. Given this extra fear here, I'm just staying away from them.
Well, what about the Saquon, the Giants side here? Because the Giants are favored. They have shown the willingness to just play Barkley come hell or high water. Like, they don't seem to care that their team has been out of it for a while now and that he's a rookie running back. And the very worst thing you can do to a rookie running back is basically run him into the ground in a meaningless situation. Giants don't seem that you want to use any of those metrics to kind of inform their decision making.
Nah.
This is a guy coming off a week 16 where he rushed the ball 21 times and had 7 targets. So 28 looks, didn't do all that much, only 77 total yards. But I think that one, they're home favorites, so that helps. Two, the Giants are negligent in their use of him. And I think they also kind of hold out this hope that he's going to get Offensive Rookie of the Year to sort of buoy the idea that this was the correct thing to do in the draft. Do you think that's enough narrative to run Barkley out in cash games here. Our system has him basically as 100% start, but that's because I'm giving him full opportunity. I want to believe that's the case. And I don't know, do we have enough narrative on the Barkley thing to see that when I run 50 lineups on our site, he's coming in 94% of them?
Yeah, Barkley is a very interesting beast to me. I think he, I was looking at this also for the cash game article after I read your write-up of him. I think he's in striking distance for the most total yards on the season of any running back. It's close. Like, I think Elliott has by far the most rushing yards, and he would need to like really go off, but it's not outside the realm of possibility. And even if that's not the case, like being the second highest rusher in the league or second highest total yardage player, that's a lot, I think, for an organization struggling to have any victories on the season. I also think this being a home game matters. Like, I think for week 17, you know, I think the Packers are in a similar situation to this, actually, where when it's week 17 and your season is kind of sucked, it's a pretty big middle finger to the fans to then just like sit the actual players that they want to come see, right? So I think all that stuff, that psychology, it winds up mattering. New York's a tough market. They know that they'll just get crushed on talk radio if they don't play their real players. I would feel a lot more comfortable with Barkley than I would with the Dallas side, I guess.
Yeah, I was trying to look this up real quick. I'll look it up before the end of the podcast. Maybe I'll even pause near the end and throw this back in here about where Barkley stands. For some reason, I'm having trouble accessing the, just adding it together on our
I pulled up our leaderboards. It's very, very close. Essentially, he has just under 1800 yards. Gurley's like 1830, McCaffrey's 1925, and then Elliott is like 1992.
So it's interesting. So that actually would probably put him in, because like McCaffrey, they've already said that they're going to limit. Gurley is out, and you have to believe that Elliott's going to be limited too. So yeah, he probably is in that, he probably is, and that has to be in the Giants' mind, because I think, not to belabor this point too far, but they've shown, if the team has not wanted to change anything leading up to this point, then right. And they want to just, and like these individual accolades are maybe going to be the thing that justify this thing, then I think I'm going to end up being comfortable with Barkley. Because here's the other thing, there's very few ways to actually reliably spend up really anywhere this week. We have a bunch of guys sitting. We have a bunch of teams that have already signaled that's going to be happening. Like guys like Gurley are already out. So we might just end up in a price crunch where when you look at the top of the running back salaries, you have McCaffrey. They've said that they think they've played him too much. Elliott, no. Then you have Barkley. Kamara, they're not going to play him. Melvin Gordon's in the timeshare. So I think that it ends up being the case where maybe Barkley is just the guy to spend up. Beckham's out again too. Do you think the Giants stick with the plan of just like throwing to guys like Shepard a lot? Like, would you feel comfortable with guys like him in cash? It's weird to think about playing the Giants in cash here, and they are coming off a week where, you know, Ingram had 6 for 87, Barkley was 7 for 34, Sterling Shepard was 7 for 113. What about the pass catchers for the Giants?
Yeah, Russell Shepard out again too. You know, I think the Giants, especially Sterling Shepard, I'm interested. I think he's still very, very cheap. He was solid last week. You know, it was only 7 targets, but I don't know who else they're going to throw the ball to on this team right now. So, you know, Ingram was a highly speculated on and interesting option last week. He only got 6 targets too, so I think you could certainly see Ingram and Shepard both be cash game viable this week.
All right, let's keep rolling. Carolina goes in and plays New Orleans. The line on this game, I know, I'm probably going in the wrong order here in terms of lines, but the Saints are favored by 7 at home. Teddy Bridgewater is going to get the start, though. They've already said they're going to sit Breeze for this week. This game is, am I correct? And you have the understanding of the playoff picture a little better. Is this game basically meaningless for the Saints at this point, correct?
Yes, the Saints have locked up home field advantage throughout the playoffs.
Okay, so they're going to start Bridgewater. I mean, if you're going to start Bridgewater, you're not going to be throwing guys like Kamara and Michael Thomas. You wouldn't think out there for heavy, kind of any kind of rotation, maybe not even at all. Like, maybe not even for a series if you're worried about it. But, I mean, Bridgewater's a guy, he can scramble. The Saints are still favored here. The Saints are still 7-point home favorites against the Panthers, who are going to start Kyle Allen, a quarterback. I mean, it doesn't look like they want to play McCaffrey really that much, because they're not doing kind of the Barkley thing. I mean, what are your thoughts on a guy like Bridgewater? Because tough guy to project in this situation. Not exactly cheap, $7,300 on FanDuel, but I mean, is there value to be had in a guy maybe who's just kind of like out there for a trial and showing what he can do? $5,300 on DraftKings.
Yeah, I mean, it's very similar to the Nick Foles situation, which we regrettably wound up being just on the outside of last week for our cash game purposes. So we passed on Foles, and most people played Foles at $6,000 on FanDuel and $4,700, I think, on DraftKings. Bridgewater is a hair more expensive. He probably has better tools to work with on the Saints here. I think a thing that would concern me about Bridgewater is that just a significantly better running game on the Saints. And even if they sit their top skill position players, like, running games are more than just the actual guys with the jerseys on. Like, it's, you know, the guys blocking and the schemes and all that kind of stuff too, that you'd have to imagine will still be in place for the Saints. So I'm not especially bullish on Bridgewater, rather. I think he's playable. I think that, you know, in a week that's almost certain to feature pretty solid value at a number of positions, my tendency for cash, you know, when I was writing up the article, was to prioritize expensive guys. Yep. I think there is a number of really good expensive quarterbacks that I'm sure we'll get to as we go along that are playing in highly meaningful games, and I would just rather play them. So, yeah, it's not outrageous. People will probably do it. I probably won't.
Yeah, and I think you can probably target the Saints defense here. I mean, this is like their third string quarterback that the Panthers are on at this point. Have not shown a willingness to really throw to wide receivers all that much this season. If you think that you're going to get less McCaffrey and just kind of more of a timeshare because they're just trying to save his legs at this point in the season, then I think you're in a situation where you could probably consider the Saints defense. I wouldn't trust any of the Saints position players here, just because I don't think they're really going to play. Maybe try to catch lightning in a bottle on like the Kirklands of the world or guys like this that are just going to be playing with the second unit, because they're, you know, maybe you see Ingram have a few more carries because that's who they're going to turn to a little bit more than Kamara, who they probably value just having more come playoff time. So maybe you want to take lightning in a bottle on these guys. I'm hard pressed to see it, but this is not to say there isn't GPP upside somewhere along the line, somewhere in here. And it's hard to be really all that confident in what the Saints are going to do. Dolphins go in and play the Bills. Bills are 5.5-point favorites here against Miami. Nothing to play for on either side, I don't think. Wait, unless Miami... Oh, yeah. No, there was some speculation going into last week. But then, no, Miami is out of the playoff picture. Obviously, the Bills are way out of the playoff picture here. Anything to like in this game at all? Looks like the running back situation is getting... They're going to get McCoy back for Buffalo, but I just don't know what you do here. People have played Josh Allen at times. Miami, forget about who even knows with this team. Like, with the running game, it's a mess. Anything to like here?
Yeah, Josh Allen now expensive too. Like, he's 7,700, and he's definitely, you know, shown flashes of that kind of Lamar Jackson. He's like a better passer probably than Jackson, and probably a slightly worse rusher, but can definitely put up totals on relatively few carries. So an upside play for me, but probably nothing more. I really like the Buffalo defense. I think they'll be extremely highly owned. They're an actual solid defense. They're not in the top tier of prices, but they're not in the bottom tier either. So they're kind of like a hedge against playing just one of those super cheap defenses. Oh, the Giants are another one. Playing a super cheap defense like the Giants on the speculation that people are going to sit. So, but yeah, that's pretty much all I'm seeing here. And on a slate that features literally every team, this probably isn't a game we need to focus on too much.
Yeah, Josh Allen, like, he throws more than Jackson, but he completes like 50% of his passes. There's some upside on maybe some of the receivers, like Zay Jones and Robert Foster have seen some targets over the last couple weeks. The targets are going to be volatile because Allen's just not an accurate thrower at all. So maybe you're going to get some downfield stuff. You want to take a shot on just maybe a long touchdown from a guy like Foster. He has done it in the past. Outside of that, it's hard to trust. The guy just can't complete more than 50% of his passes. All right. Lions go in and play Green Bay. Green Bay, 7.5-point favorites, nothing to play for. They have said this line suggests that they are going to be full go in terms of their offense. That means basically a full go. That just means Aaron Rodgers. And then you figure out what the rest of the situation is going to be. Jamal Williams was a guy that people played a lot last week. I was not as high on him, just based on him not having been very good in the time that Aaron Jones was not on the field. But 15 carries for 95 yards and a touchdown, 9 targets for 61 yards. They did get an overtime in that. Could you see people going back to Jamal Williams? Not a situation where they have a lot to play for, but home field favorites in an advantageous situation. Lions, I think the Lions are now the worst ranked defense in the league. Let me just check that real quick while I say it. But any interest here in the Packers side?
Yeah, I really like the Packers, actually. The Lions are the worst now against the pass.
Against all odds.
You know, chasing down stalwarts of the game like Oakland, Tampa Bay, New Orleans, Detroit has exceeded them all and is now the worst. And actually, I wrote up Devontae Adams, too, you know, especially on DraftKings where he's just 8,000. The guy had 18 targets last week. And last week, if the Packers were going to start letting down, and it's kind of nuts, like, especially given how injury-riddled they've been, the fact that they just, like, keep throwing people out there for essentially pride is the best thing I can tell. That's got to be a good sign. You know, it's not quite the same situation. You know, Cobb, of course, had a concussion, missed last week. He might be back. He might be interesting on 5,000. Adam's currently questionable with signs that he'll play. But, yeah, I think there's a lot to like on the Packers, actually. And, again, if they were just trying last week, you have to think, going back to Green Bay, being a publicly owned team, they've got to play their players in this game. So I'm going to monitor this one closely. And especially like if Adams were to sit, then I think like Cobb and even Valdez-Scantling, there's going to be a lot of value here.
Yeah, I think we need to monitor the Adams thing. Like you said, I think he's going to play. I think we take solace in the idea that they didn't have much going on last week and went full bore against the Jets. So I think you'll see Williams probably as a relatively high-owned running back on the slate. Maybe not a complete and utter chalk play, but you have to be really encouraged about what they did last week in terms of using him. He touched the ball at like an elite level, and this Detroit defense is just so garbage. He's only 6,800 on FanDuel. That is something of a bargain. And like we said, I think we can still use the home favorite, you know, more than -7 kind of marker to say this is still a good spot for running backs. It'll be interesting to see where his ownership lands, because there are a couple other interesting guys in sort of similar type situations with maybe a little bit more to play for that we're gonna roll through as we go. Detroit, Kenny Golladay is questionable. I mean, if he were to sit, I guess maybe something opens up here for Detroit. It's hard to really see it. I think you can really consider the Green Bay defense in this situation. Detroit's offense has just, they've lost everyone. They've been terrible. It's on the road. Nothing to play for. It's hard to see them mustering much.
Yeah, Green Bay, another defensive team that's showing up in our lineups at the moment, if for exactly the reasons you described.
Jacksonville goes in and plays the Texans. Texans, 6.5-point favorites. Remind me here real quick, what if anything are the Texans playing for?
They're playing for a lot, is the short of it. There's an outrageous amount of ifs, ands, or buts that we don't need to go through. The short of it is that the Texans are in the playoffs. They have an extreme outside shot at just being the number one seed overall in the AFC. But it's like, you know, there's like four, I think, contingencies. And some of them are like incalculable, like the strength of victory tiebreaker over the Chiefs and stuff. Right. Like it's truly outrageous. And there are, though, still a lot of like pretty plausible ways the Texans can get a first round bye. And I think these are the teams that I am kind of like the most interested in this week, because teams that can get a first round bye but kind of control their own destiny are in a hugely important position this week. Because like, take the Patriots, for instance. If the Patriots beat the Jets, that's like winning in the first round of the playoffs, right? But you get to play the Jets instead of a real team in the playoffs. And so teams that are in positions like this, I'm hugely into them. So I think Houston, you can bet that this will be a week where they go really, really seriously all in on trying to win this game.
And so one thing about the Houston, the timing of the game matters for this stuff too, because Houston plays at 1. The Chargers, who are also in this mix, they both play at 4. So the Houston is not going to know the outcomes of those games, right? Like, so, but those other teams might know the outcomes of the Houston game and the Patriots game early, which is going to throw things
up. Embarrassing for the league, by the way, that they would not just have all the AFC teams play at one time and all the NFC teams play at the other time.
Right. So unless, I mean, feel free to comment if I'm missing something here, like in the comment section, because this playoff picture gets really difficult to kind of boil down, like when it gets down to this nitty gritty stuff. But Houston is in this situation where they're going to have to play all the way through the final clock here, not knowing what their fate is. And again, they're still in the playoffs. Now, let's talk real quick about the Houston injury situation. Lamar Miller is going to be back and he's going to play. He sat after sitting out last week. They have lost Demaryius Thomas to the Achilles injury, which is a pretty big blow. Kiki Kute is questionable right now, and he's not really been playing, and it's hard to, and he hasn't been practicing. So I would probably range him more close to doubtful, but we'll see. They are now left, in terms of pass catchers, I get this is still the Jacksonville defense, but Houston, as far as I can figure, is basically like DeAndre Hopkins and DeAndre Carter. Like, I don't really, like, they've already lost, there's someone else they'd already lost too. So what do we do with targets here for guys like Hopkins? DeAndre Carter is a guy, he had 7 targets last week, 6 for 61. He's basically min-priced. And then we have Lamar Miller in a situation that they could really just kind of feed him the ball in a game where they want to win. How much exposure do we want for the Tech to have, like, on the Texan side of the ball here for DFS?
Sure, yeah, I wrote up DeAndre Carter. I think Houston has shown that they really want to rely on somebody in that wide receiver 2 spot, especially someone who can come out of the slot. Kute was scratching that itch for them. He hasn't played or practiced in 4 weeks now, so I don't think you can count on him, at the very least, it being 100%. Will Fuller, of course, went down early in the season.
And, Will Fuller, that's right.
Yeah, they're just in a total, it's just total shambles right now. I think that they don't feel like they just want to lean on Lamar Miller or, like, you know, Watson coming out of the running game. I think, yeah, it's Jacksonville, but at a minimum price, like, you probably wouldn't want to play Carter at 6,500, but if you pay the minimum and it allows you to pay up, like, at quarterback, for instance, I'd feel much more comfortable going cheap on Carter than I and paying up a quarterback than I would going cheap like Teddy Bridgewater, and then, you know, paying a $7,000 wide receiver. I think there's a very good chance that he plays $7,000 wide receiver value, and that you'll be very happy with that investment.
Yeah, I think we're going to see. I think the targets should be there. I think this is just, again, like if we're talking about just opportunity opening up for a team, we saw it one to the other happening right when Thomas goes down, that Carter is just the next guy up, and they're on their sixth, you know, or fourth next guy up at this point. But that just, sometimes the wide receiver, the drop off in talent might not be as big as you would come to expect, especially with a quarterback like Watson. So I think you can see a lot of targets out of Hopkins. I believe he's going to draw the Ramsey designation here. I was just double checking that, if that was like the projected thing. Lamar Miller, I think you could see, if you saw 20 total touches out of him this week in a game that obviously they want to win, they've shown the willingness to do that as well. The only thing that gives you pause is that Jacksonville is still a slow team and have been good on defense as well, even for all the other problems that they've had on the offensive end. Looks like Fournette's not going to play. Looks like Carlos Hyde's not going to play. They're going to split carries between TJ Yeldon and I think David Williams. Looks like Blake Bortles is back to start. This team's a mess. I think you can probably play the Houston defense too. I mean, how interested would you be in the Houston defense here, knowing that they are going to be coming full bore as well? And then we can move on to the next game.
Yeah, I'd be somewhat interested in them. They're very, very expensive. You know, Jacksonville has one of the lowest totals of the week, and Houston's 5,000 so on FanDuel. So I don't know if you can afford it, but if you can, sure. I mean, they're a good defense to play this week.
Vincent Smith is projected to take some of that wide receiver three stuff as well for Houston. So, yeah, just another interesting game that we're going to want to keep an eye on, I think, just because when we're just trying to look at motivations, Houston definitely is up there with the group. The teams that do not have any motivation, I don't believe, but still have a lot of high total here, Falcons and the Bucks. They come in with a 52 over-under. That started at 49.5 and is up to 52, 1.5-point favorite for the road Falcons. Neither of these teams have anything to play for, but Vegas still sees them at least trying. When you see totals like this without having anything to play for, do you feel like we get, I mean, can we go like full targets on guys like Julio Jones? Can we go full targets on guys like Mike Evans, like Jameis? These guys have fantasy relevance. It seems like the total sure suggests it. And then these are the games that always just confuse me a little bit in terms of opportunity.
Yeah, I feel that way too. I mean, these are the types of teams, especially the Bucks. I mean, good Lord. The Bucks have shown, even in just regular, like the season is just burbling along happily, and they'll just pull the quarterback in halftime, like I think three times over the course of the season. I don't know how you trust the Bucks. It's a good matchup. You know, James has a solid projection in our system if you assume that he gets his full playing time and so forth. I think it's an interesting big tournament option. You can just do so much safer than the Bucks here that you really be, like, I think to take a risk like this, you need to be lining up for like really outsized rewards. And I don't see that on the Bucs side. On the Falcons side, you know, they've been one of these teams for DFS purposes that their season was lost early. You know, they were 4-9. They've won two straight. They, I guess, are still playing for, you know, I don't know, brownie points or just trying to do their best or whatever. You take them. Now they're on the road for the final game of the season. They have to be looking forward to next season. I'd also feel like I was taking on a lot of risk here too. And I think there's less extenuating little like gut feeling factors that make me want to trust them. So I would not be hugely interested in signing up for any part of this game, I don't think.
Tevin Coleman did outsnap Ryan Hill 2-1 before leaving with an injury last game. Hill was much better, 8 for 115. Coleman was fine too, 10 for 50. 10 for 51, so averaging more than 5 yards a carry. Still tough to trust the opportunity here. Now, Coleman does not have an injury designation, so I guess you like that.
They're splitting carries. I mean, I think you... I know. I guess Hill. Yeah, you're right. Hill's, most of Hill's carries came after Coleman went out.
But, yeah, that, they were. Yeah, that's what I mean. They really weren't split. That was kind of going the way we wanted it to. Then Coleman left the game in the third quarter. So I still though. And this week, it's not. You want some upside? These guys, both these guys, have some big play opportunity. Kind of upside. The Tampa Bay defense is still very bad. I think Julio's right there as well in terms of GPP. You can really consider running out Julio. They're just the kind of team that say, hey, it's the last game of the season. Let's feed him the ball. Let's get him some stats. Like, let's just kind of figure this thing out and then go into the offseason. I don't think they're not a candidate to rest. So I think that even though the teams don't have anything to play for, I think there's plenty of upside here. I'm going to be hard pressed to trust it for cash. But if you want to like do a lock in Julio, lock in Mike Evans, lock in Jameis and run those lineups, I think it wouldn't shock me to have those lineups end up near the top of GPP list just because we've seen the ability on both sides of the ball to be able to kind of put up those big numbers. But for cash, you're going to be, I don't know. I doubt we're going to go there. All right. Another team with something to play for here. Patriots host the Jets. Patriots are 13.5-point favorites against the Jets. I believe they are also playing for home field advantage. Is that correct? And then B, what do you, is there anything to like here about the Patriots, or is like is a run game maybe just still spread too thin in a game that they should? It looks like the Vegas line signals they're going to run all over the Jets here.
Yeah, so New England, definitely one of these teams that I'm highly interested in targeting. Basically, they need some help to get home field advantage throughout the playoffs. But if they win and the Chiefs and Chargers lose, they could do it. I think the number two seed, though, is pretty... they control their own destiny, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So, and I think they can still make it in if the Texans lose. Sorry, it's a little convoluted to wade through all this. But yes, they can make it in. They control their own destiny to the number two seed, and they can lose and get there if the Texans lose. So, you know, you do your quick what time are the games exercise here. You see they play at 1 o'clock. They're going to be playing everybody. They're going to really, really be trying to win. It would be crazy to give up what amounts to what should be a free win against the Jets to just roll the dice in a round one playoff game, because all of these AFC teams that are going to be in the first round of the playoffs are teams that, I mean, we just saw them lose to the Steelers, right? So these are all teams that could fight them off. So, yeah, I mean, yes, they're going to play their guys. You hate to see how Brady's been. You can't play him on his current prices for DFS purposes. But the guy I'm really interested in playing is Julian Edelman. You know, especially with Gordon gone now, in the last 3 weeks, 10 or more targets in each of those, 2 touchdowns in those weeks. He's been used in the red zone before very solidly, you know, coming in those double digit to high teens fantasy points. I think he's a really good, safe, mid-range wide receiver on a week that kind of demands that you can find someone in that price range. There's other good guys for this price range too, but I really like Edelman this week.
Yep, I'm with you. 10 targets last week. The run game, Sony Michel, when he's on the field, they just hand him the ball. He had 23 snaps last week and had 18 carries in those snaps. So it's just a matter of him getting on the field, because Rex Burkhead did outsnap him 25-23, and then James White outsnapped the three of them 29-25-23. So it's split up a little too much an opportunity to trust from a cash game perspective. There's just the fact that they're basically willing to, depending on how the game is going, split these touches three ways is just not anything you can trust. And they still... between those three guys, they carried the ball 39 times last week. So it's a team that's willing to run, and it's just they're not going to just do a bell cow kind of situation with any of them. And I can't imagine, I really just can't imagine that situation changes at all. Jets, Robbie Anderson had a big week last week. I don't know if we think that they're just going to get feisty and try to hang with the, try to play spoiler to the Patriots. I mean, that stuff kind of does matter. Vegas doesn't suggest it, but we've seen teams like this just want to still be competitive, like down the stretch. Like the 49ers have been this way. Like, there's pride in playing the upset kind of version card. How much do you take into account like that with a division rival like the Jets? Do you think that matters at all for them? Can you see some upside in their passing game? Like, again, Robbie Anderson had a huge week last week. Anything to like in this before we move on?
Yeah, I think they will probably try their best to play spoiler. I don't see why they wouldn't. Robbie Anderson, you know, he's another guy we wrote up, and he was 5,900 last week on FanDuel. He's jumped up to 7,000, so I don't know that Robbie Anderson is where you want to invest your $7,000, even in spite of 2 good weeks in a row. I suspect some people will do it just because he's been so good in the last couple weeks. But people forget very quickly that those really were just 2 weeks. I mean, there was long stretches with Darnold before this where he was just getting 7 targets a game, turning in 50 to 70 yards, maybe sprinkling in a touchdown here or there. Like, recency bias seems to me to be like not in your favor here in a guy who just has really completely come and gone. Like, people forget Robbie Anderson was kind of a prospect going into this season for like a sleeper, you know, sleeper season long pick. He was the minimum price after 4 weeks this season and not for the wrong reason. So I'm not super excited about it. Also, the Patriots, while they have struggled on defense from time to time, I think they are smart enough to understand that Anderson is really the Jets' only legitimate offensive threat in the passing game, and I think they're able to shut him down there too. So
I have him at 8.5 targets. Does that sound correct to you, judging on what he's done over the last 13, 11, 7, 7, 5, 7, 10 in the last 6 weeks, 7 weeks? I have him at 8.5 targets. Yeah. Does that strike you as the right number, high or low?
Well, with a gun to my head, it sounds like the
don't put a gun to your head, buddy. It's not that important. I just need to know if you think it's high or low. Don't, no reason to threaten.
It's like you're sticking
yourself.
A gun right at my head, and you're like, "Tell me now if this is correct." That seems fine. Like, I think you could go a half a target higher or lower, and I would be fine either way. Like, I could listen to all those arguments. I don't think it'll ultimately matter that much, because I actually haven't looked at his projection for cash, because I kind of like mentally ruled him out when, just because I saw the huge price increase. So I think you could probably even go up to like 9 targets, and I would guess he wouldn't show up in our cash game articles. But yeah, it's fine. That number seems fine.
5,600 on DraftKings puts him in like that sort of like wide receiver two, mid-range kind of guy that sometimes you do end up defaulting to, like needing someone in that price range. Wouldn't be the worst, I don't think, if you saw
him. Yeah, I'm comfortable with it. I'm more comfortable with that because I could see him, you know, turning those targets into like a decent amount of catches but fewer yards. I also think he has that in him too, especially with a young quarterback in a tough spot. So, yeah, I'd be okay with him on DraftKings.
All right, we're going to move into the 4 o'clock games here. And as I was saying that, my browser switched off there. Okay, Raiders go in and play the Chiefs. Chiefs, another one of these teams with something to play for. You can walk us through that. Right. 4 o'clock, 4:25 start for all these games, so they don't have an early 4 o'clock. Chiefs, 14.5-point favorites. I do want to break down a little bit what we could come to expect from this team. But first, before we do that, what are the Chiefs playing for here, and what will they know ahead of time going into this 4:25 game?
Yeah, so basically the team that's really meaningful for them is the Chargers, who plays at the same time as them. The Chargers and Chiefs right now have the same record, but the Chiefs control their own destiny. So they'll be in this game, and if they win, they're in. If they tie and the Chargers lose or tie, then they can still get in. They can also just get in. I mean, there's a number of different ways this can work out. The big problem becomes if they lose. If the Chiefs lose, they could fall out of first round bye contention as well, because they lose the tiebreaker to the Patriots because they had a head-to-head loss to them. Okay, so if you're still following me, you'll realize that yes, the Chiefs are playing Oakland, and yes, they're 13.5-point favorites. They really need this game, and they won't know how much they need it until things have really gone off. So I guess they will know the outcome of the New England game in the 1 o'clock thing, so that matters for that second seed. So if New England somehow loses to the Jets, I guess that could take some of the stress off the Chiefs a little bit, but they're still going to be playing, man. Like, how could they not, right? So
right.
I think, you know, when it all comes out in the wash, you have to assume you're going to get full run out of guys like Mahomes, Hill, Kelsey, you know, guys that have been very relevant for cash game purposes and just DFS purposes all season long.
Okay, so let's start with this. Let's talk about them from a cash game perspective. Now, the 14.5-point favorites, you want to have the running backs in play, obviously, and I'm not, you know, it looks like Spencer Ware, who is questionable, is going to play. Now, they had kind of leaned on Damian Williams. Damian Williams has been a great play over the last couple weeks for Kansas City, catching the ball a lot, running the ball. But now they're going to get Spencer Ware back. Where do we want to set opportunity for guys like Ware and Williams, knowing how Kansas City has sort of used the running back in the past? Would we feel comfortable going above and beyond on one of these guys? Or like, have they both just been good enough and kind of been around long enough that it's hard to go overboard on the, so talk to me about that. And then I wanted to get a little bit into the passing game.
Yeah. So I was a little bit concerned about the running situation when I was looking at this for my cash games this week, primarily because the last time they played Oakland. So last time they played Oakland, the game finished with a relatively close score, but part of that was Oakland just outscoring the Chiefs by 10 in the fourth quarter. But the Chiefs finished winning by only a touchdown. In that game, Ware had 14 carries and Williams had 5. So that obviously gives, you know, a nod in the direction of Ware. Williams was much better on a yards per carry basis in that game. And Ware is one of these like older, kind of like quote unquote experienced running backs that has a couple miles on him, not terribly so, but it's kind of uninspiring, never really inspired much confidence to win a starting job anywhere in the long term. So I wouldn't be surprised to see them move more towards a timeshare. And that is somewhat terrifying for me. And that being said, you look over at the passing game. Again, this game stayed close. Tyreek Hill was like a 70% start that week in cash, and he had one catch on 6 targets. He was stone cold awful before returning and being excellent the next week. Now, again, part of that was the Chiefs did jump out to a 10-point lead in the first quarter. They were up, I think, 17 going into the fourth quarter. They didn't have a lot of incentive to use him, but they did use Kelsey a ton. And so this is actually, like, on paper, I think Mahomes is like a pretty easy play if you can afford him. He crushed the Raiders. You'd have to think that he's been so much better than everyone else from a DFS perspective this season, like outscoring Roethlisberger, who is second by almost 5 fantasy points a game. I think you'd play Mahomes. Speculating on the rest, though, feels really hard right now.
Yeah, I think I'm fine. Mahomes is basically coming in the top of our cash game lineups on both sites right now. I think this is a fine place for me to think about spending, knowing that they're going to need to play it all the way through to the end, no matter what they see from the early games. I think that's good enough. And we've seen an outsized piece of the opportunity on the scoring end come from Mahomes. Tyreek Hill is a guy that we have. He's coming in at 98% of our cash game lineups on FanDuel right now. It'll be interesting to see if that sticks. With some of these teams like the Chiefs, more than other weeks, he's not coming in on FanDuel, or excuse me, on DraftKings right now. More than other weeks, I'm willing to go a little bit overboard on opportunity for guys like Hill, guys like Mahomes and guys like Kelce, because I think those quantities are so known that if you need to pay a little bit extra for that this week, I think that's probably worth it. And we'll be on Twitch on Sunday morning talking through that very scenario, because I'm not willing to make a complete and total call on it right now. But my gut tells me that this is a place that you can basically overspend a little bit if you can get savings, if you can just get the savings elsewhere. Jordy Nelson's a guy, if you think Oakland's going to try to stay in the game, Nelson has gotten a decent amount of targets over the last couple weeks, been reliable enough on them, and he's not going to break the bank for you. So if you're looking for a cheap wide receiver, he's been a guy that we've rolled out there for a few weeks now. All right, I'll keep moving in. Cardinals go into Seattle. Tell me about the playoff implications for the Seahawks here, and then we can talk about where we want to attack them from a DFS perspective.
Yeah, so the Seahawks have clinched a playoff berth. I think basically they're not really playing for anything too meaningful other than seeding. They're either going to be the fifth seed or the sixth seed. And so, you know, I guess they get to pick their matchup on some level. If they are for some reason really scared of the Saints, then they'll battle and try and get the five seed. I think they are a team that you're taking on some risk for, because as far as the teams that are in the playoffs, they are playing for the least.
Okay, so we have seen like a ton of carries out of Chris Carson, but they just run the ball a lot. Like Chris Carson gets a lot of carries, but Mike Davis gets a lot of opportunity too, especially in the pass game. Would you feel comfortable setting Carson at something like full projection? This guy's coming off a 27 carry week last week, 116 yards and two touchdowns. They're huge home favorites. Would Carson be a guy that would fit that sort of cash game, checking all the boxes from a running back perspective, knowing how they've used them? And would there be enough that they're playing for that you would trust like a 20 carry game out of Chris Carson? Because if you do, then he starts becoming a pretty interesting guy here from DFS perspective.
Yeah, so important to understand with Carson that when they beat the Chiefs, that was a really, really, really important game. The Chiefs are obviously a great team. The Chiefs were playing for a lot. Seattle really needed that win, because if they didn't, they would have been in a much more precarious situation at 8-7. Yeah, 8-7 than they are now. I think that was their pull out all the stops game. And now that they're heading into the playoffs, I could see a more conservative approach with their running backs. That being said, Carson is really cheap. He's just not priced like a guy who even has the potential to get 27 carries in a game. In a game where the game script favors them so dramatically, I could see him paying value anyway. I just want to point out, though, that like last week to this week, much different stakes, and you have to go into it with kind of much different assumptions about how the game might play out.
Yeah, and you're getting, it's one of those things, you're getting a great matchup here. Arizona's bottom third defense on the season, terrible against the run, 27th in DVOA against the rush. They wanted to just get up early. It seems like it would be on the back of Carson.
And you can just get one half out of Carson, though. That's the problem, right? Like,
yep.
No doubt about it. So, yeah.
All right, moving into moving in through the rest of these games, we have the Browns go in and play the Ravens. Ravens here are 5.5-point favorites against a Cleveland team who is out of it but has been wanting to sort of play spoiler along the way. Tell me about Baltimore's playoff implications for Baltimore and whether or not they think they are going to go full bore in this one.
Dude, this is a completely crazy situation for the Ravens, where they haven't clinched a playoff spot. And they could be the two seed and get a first round bye if things work right. So, I mean, it's, I think basically like multiple teams need to lose. I think the Pats and the Texans need to lose. But if that does happen, and it's not outside the realm of possibility, you could look at the Ravens having a first round bye. And again, given that they could just be out of the playoffs altogether, they're going to be absolutely pulling out all the stops here. Again, oh no, I'm sorry. Yeah, both of the, their division rivals are playing at the 425 slate. So, yeah, they won't know their own destiny. They won't know the result of the Pittsburgh game, which is the really meaningful game for them there. And, yeah, you have to think that they're going to be just pulling out all the stops and going all out here.
What do you think about guys like Lamar Jackson? I mean, it's basically him and Edwards. You really can't do anything with the wide receivers on this team. So basically, when you're talking about the Ravens and whether or not you think that they are value plays, you're really only talking about Lamar Jackson and to some degree Edwards, and they've run Dixon a little bit as well too. But any interest here on the Lamar Jackson side? Like, especially if they're just needing to establish everything that he can bring to the table in terms of, does he bring you enough floor in this situation to maybe think about pivoting off of Mahomes, who we haven't talked a ton about different quarterbacks to play here today, which has me a little concerned just in terms of like what our options are. But would Jackson be one of those guys?
Yeah, Jackson, I think, is playable here. You know, it's interesting because these running quarterback teams, the card that they can play in games that they must win is to just give the ball to the running quarterback way more than usual, right? The idea being that, like, hey, if we this is would be the game where we can give him the extra hits, and we can't really be dreaming on the future right now because everything is on the line. The trick with Jackson, though, is that's been the case since he's become the starter. I mean, like, if you just go back to that Cincinnati game, they've basically been in must-win games ever since, and we've seen huge carry games out of him, 26 carries, 18 carries, and what we know about Jackson is that, by and large, he gives you about 16 or 18 fantasy points, and you know, hasn't mattered about the matchup. You know, this is something we were very curious to see with him playing LA last week, coming off of basically the best conceivable stretch for a quarterback in terms of going up against opposing passers. But yeah, it's a situation where they could pull out all the stops. I don't really know what that looks like. And the ceiling on Jackson hasn't been that high anyway. And the floor has been fine. So he's playable. But yeah, I don't think you want to look at this like in the same way we've done with, like, you know, say like Russell Wilson or Cam Newton in the past, where it's like, hey, if they get 15 carries in this game, they could score 40 fantasy points. I just don't see Jackson in that same light.
Yeah, I think that makes sense for me. And like I said, I don't think you're really not going over. You can't play anything in the passing game. I do find the Browns to be interesting because guys like Baker are so competitive that you could just see there's no reason. They've been playing basically full tilts for the last few weeks now, and there's been so much narrative around him and his comments about Hugh Jackson over the course of the week that I could see him coming out. Vegas doesn't like them for a lot of points, but if we saw just like a max effort game from the Browns here, it really wouldn't shock me because I think they're just in. I can see them with some of the other teams, like who's interested in playing big time spoiler. I do put the Browns in that camp of, this is a team that I think will try to pull out all the stops just to beat the Ravens and
yes,
just
be I like, agree completely.
And this is our Super Bowl. Like, this is our Super Bowl kind of thing, right? Like, if we can put a stamp on going on to next season as having knocked someone out of the playoffs, I think that would be a motivating
factor.
Cleveland
can finish over 500 in this game too. They're going to definitely.
Such a disaster they didn't make the playoffs. Season. Like, the Hugh Jackson thing was such a disaster. Keeping him around as the coach for that long, just 100%, and not having Baker as the starting quarterback cost them a playoff berth. And I think they all know it. This has been the talk of this week. Mayfield knows that they hate Hugh Jackson. It's pretty funny how that's kind of playing out. All right, Bears going to play Minnesota. Minnesota, 5.5-point favorites. This did start at a -3 and moved up 2.5 points on the Minnesota side, 40.5. Over under. Walk me quickly through Minnesota's stance here along with Chicago's. It looks like both are currently maybe control their own destiny. I'm not sure. This line does not suggest that Chicago has anything to play for.
Yeah, so Chicago does have a chance to have a first round bye. So that is a meaningful outcome for them, obviously. Again, this could conceivably be their first round playoff game. And, you know, again, it's like a little bit convoluted. I think basically they need to win. Oh, no, I'm sorry. They need to win and the Rams need to lose. But are the Rams going to lose to the 49ers? Probably not. So right. I think, you know, essentially, you know, I think most people are imagining that they won't need to actually win this game unless the Rams do something completely out of control and manage to lose. The Vikings, I think, are a little bit more interesting here because the Vikings are not in the playoffs right now. They can only finish in the fifth or sixth seed, but that is still plausible. And again, if you can make the playoffs, you're going to do every last thing in your power in order to do so. So my suspicion for this game is Vikings pull out all the stops. I could imagine a situation where Chicago just looks at a division rival and, you know, just like just their own, and in the back of their mind, the fact that they could wind up getting the 2 seed means that they wind up playing everyone as best that they can. But yeah, certainly Vegas thinks right now that might not be the case.
Yep. So I think you can look at guys like Dalvin Cook as favorites here. If they're going to kind of lean on him early, they control their own destiny because if they win, the Vikings, that is, they win, they would be in the playoffs with on the back of the tie being they're getting a tie over what Philadelphia had. By
yeah, tie is very meaningful in the AFC too, Pittsburgh. So
9-6-1 it would be for the Vikings, and it would be 9-7 if everything shook out for the Eagles as well. All right, let's keep rolling through because we're going to start going long again. There are a couple other meaningful games here. One of those, like the aforementioned Eagles, 6.5-point road favorites against the Redskins, 41.5-point total. Foles is coming off, obviously, a sort of transcended fantasy week where
he was
chalk and then he was good and then he kind of got bailed out because they had to come back there at the end and or they would go to the overtime. He ended up throwing 49 passes. They have to try to win this game because if they win and Minnesota loses, they would be in the playoffs and they're playing at the same time. Do we see max effort passing volume out of Foles again here? The running back situation was muddy to say the least. Sproles out-snapped Josh Adams 38-25, even though Adams out-carried him, but Sproles out-touched him with 9 carries and 6 targets. Do you think people go back to Nick Foles here? He was obviously a huge week, massive, QB1 kind of upside, have something to play for. Where do you stand here on Foles?
Yeah, I wouldn't be super excited to play Foles. I mean, I thought he was a fine play last week, and I gave a good play last week. You know, I made a very strong case for him in our cash game article. He was also 1,600 less, right, and arguably in a better matchup. So I don't really know why you would want to roll Foles out here. I mean, he's expensive now. I mean, he's basically a mid-range quarterback, and nobody would have even been considering him as a mid-range quarterback. So I certainly won't join that group this week.
Yep, I think I agree with you. And we did see big games though out of guys that I think we maybe can take some interest in here, especially from the pass catching side. Zach Ertz saw an unreal 16 targets in this game. He went 12 for 110 and 2 receiving touchdowns. You like to see that when there's sort of a quarterback change. Not Foles was a full on quarterback.
Yeah,
change.
No, that matters for sure.
But where do we want to set? You okay, buddy? You gonna stay awake? I hear a little yawn there. Are we gonna make it through?
Yeah, sorry, I was trying to talk and then I started yawning.
Where do we want to set guys like Ertz? Like, would Ertz, like in that Kelsey kind of realm, be a situation where we want to say like 11 targets? I mean, this is crazy town to go in terms of like this kind of targets, especially for a tight end. But I do want to make sure we prioritize teams like this that have something to play for. Could we set a guy like Ertz at like, you know, sort of like wide receiver one type opportunity in this game?
Yeah, you could. By the way, you're just in my head now with the yawning. I just got in late from my traveling last night, so I do apologize to everyone out there. Ertz, in the first two games of the season with Foles under center, had 10 and 13 targets. So I think 11 is totally within reason. I think you could go higher, frankly. I think you could go up to like 12, something like that. And I don't think you'd be out of bounds. Again, just my general disclaimer of it being week 17 and teams that are playing for nothing could just start acting like they're playing for nothing. And so with a relatively priced piece like Ertz, I mean, in a world where tight end is just a totally barren wasteland of talent, Ertz is a beacon in the darkness there. So I would be a little bit cautious, I guess. I don't think I would feel as confident in him as, say, like a guy we didn't mention, which was Tyreek Hill. At a similar price point, I think if you're comparing the two of them, I would prefer Hill in a very meaningful game with probably a similar level of opportunity in a much better matchup rather than prioritizing Ertz, who, great player, but always has a chance to just get game scripted out by his team.
What about just Ertz versus Kelsey? Basically the same price on FanDuel. Kelsey's a little bit more, 500 more on DraftKings. Do you have an idea there? Like, do you have a conviction play?
I'll take Kelsey. I think Kelsey, especially given the fact that he just bludgeoned Oakland the last time around. 13 targets against them, 12 catches, tons of yardage, even though mostly the game was out of hand, intended to favor the run. I would be pretty interested in running Kelsey over Ertz, I think.
Yeah, I think I probably agree, and it's going to be close. Very close.
Yeah, I don't, yeah.
Just giving, you know, anytime you're getting into double-digit target projections out of tight ends, you are looking at like guys that I think are gonna probably start creeping into lineups. So it's gonna be interesting to see where that lands. On the Washington side, not expected to put up many points here. They are playing with basically their entire receiving core out of the game. Doxson's out, Jordan Reed's already out, Vernon Davis is out. I'm missing somebody else. There's somebody else out. Mo Harris is out. Basically, everyone's out. We did see Crowder get some targets out of Josh Johnson.
Crowder, it's been a while since we talked about this guy. Yeah.
I mean, 5,600 on FanDuel. You can kind of do worse. I'm just trying to look for anything here. You can do worse. In a week where maybe we want to spend up, I don't totally
let's
mind
go.
It.
Let's use Crowder. Let's close out the season with a little Crowder.
No, we got a couple. Don't worry about
so
it. We have
well
a couple.
The other 50 dozen times that we've tried Jameson Crowder. One guy we didn't mention, actually, that was in a previous game, and I'll just compare him because the price range is similar and actually you get a discount on him. And I think this, like, when you start to compare Crowder to the other cheap guys, in all seriousness, I think it starts to fall apart a little bit. Let's just talk about Jordy Nelson. I mean, Jordy Nelson, I made a strong case for him in the cash game article. Since he's really been in this particular role, 11 targets, 7, 8, 10, he's been effective on all those and has no touchdowns. But again, not great because you like to see your team source touchdowns. But that first big game was against Kansas City. He had 10 catches on 11 targets. And again, Oakland in that spot where they could play significant spoiler to a team that I have to think they're kind of sick of, right? Hearing about Mahomes and, like, you know, just hearing how awesome he is all the time. I love Jordy Nelson. And comparing him to Jamison Crowder, who's like might get a couple more targets on a terrible team with terrible quarterback play and all the rest. Give me Nelson any day. Give me DeAndre Carter over this guy any day. And I don't think you need three cheap ones. So I personally, Doug, will not be playing Jamison Crowder this week.
I should have mentioned too, just going back to a previous game because I know we talked about it already. I probably should have made more mention of the Seahawks as a defense you can play. Arizona right now projected for 12 yeah. and a, 12 and a half implied points, which is, oh man, let's look in the mirror time with 12 and a half points as a professional.
Again, they're just expensive. So, you know, if you can pay the 47, yes, you're going to be 12 and a half point total is like really, really
oh
funny.
Boy, it's so embarrassing. So, okay, but we get three more games to roll through here. Bengals and Steelers. Steelers, 14 and a half point favorites. Looks like they're going to get James Conner back this week, and I'm interested to hear your take on where we land on James Conner's opportunity in this game because, one, the Steelers look like they need to win this game. They're big home favorites, and we've seen them say, when our running back is here, that running back plays all the snaps, but they've also gotten a lot out of Jalen Samuels over the last couple weeks. Where do you land on the Steelers running back situation, knowing that Conner's practiced in full this week, so it sure looks like he's going to play? They've done one thing as a team, and now they kind of just have two guys around. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, Pittsburgh, another team that has to play for absolutely everything. So just assume that they're going to do whatever they feel like is in their best interest. You know, that doesn't give you a ton of information. Conner, you know, how much can you really trust a guy who's, you know, it's been full 4 weeks, 28 days since he's last strapped on pads in an NFL game? That's not an eternity, but for a team that's seen something out of their running back too, it's kind of hard to imagine that they just like stick him right back in there and just give him the 25 carries regardless of how it's going, kind of like they were doing earlier this season. So I don't totally trust it, to be honest. I think, again, it's a playable option. I think if you heard some definitive news out of their camp that he was like going to be the guy, and the Steelers like to have the guy, so you know that would be meaningful for me. I think if not, though, it'd be really hard to trust. I think if Conner winds up sitting, I think Samuels is a really good play. I just don't know if you're going to hear it before the 4:25 kickoff time.
I do think he's going to play, and I'm not comfortable going full projection like we have in the past. Mm-hmm. Like I said, this is a guy, in terms of usage per game, is among the leaders in the league, but that was before they established having a guy like Jalen Samuels who could maybe just come in and spell him as well. So I think if you saw a shift in approach from the Steelers this game, it wouldn't shock me. Somewhat ominous injury yeah. designation here on Antonio Brown, which is they had given him the day off on Wednesday, and then he said he wasn't good enough to practice on Friday, and there's the results of whatever test they had done on him are not in yet. So the Antonio Brown thing would matter. I'd be shocked me if he didn't play, I guess, but you never like to see a guy who's supposed to practice and then not practice. And so I think this would be news that we're definitely waiting for going in, unless I'm missing a note here, but I believe this is the last update we're recording this Saturday morning. I think we're going to probably be waiting in Antonio Brown, and it would be interesting to know if we didn't even have the news even leading into the 1 o'clock games, where we would end up landing on guys like Smith-Schuster, Eli Rogers, you know, some of their other pass catchers, more passing out of the backfield as well. So the Antonio Brown thing might matter, and I'm hoping that I'm not missing a note as we record this. All right, a couple more. I don't think you need to really consider that much on the Bengals side. They're without everybody. They're all the wide receivers.
I really like Roethlisberger. I was looking something up really quick, but I think Roethlisberger is another guy you can consider for cash here too.
Would you rather play him or Mahomes? Mahomes is 800 more on FanDuel, so you get a savings on Roethlisberger here. He's a guy that we were fine running out in cash last week. They're basically the same price on DraftKings. We have Mahomes projected for significantly more, but I'm wondering if on FanDuel, the savings would be worth it to go down to a guy like Roethlisberger.
That's a math question, I think, rather than like a gut feeling question. I think both are great plays on paper. Again, Mahomes has averaged almost 5 more fantasy points than Roethlisberger on the season, which is just so much. I mean, if you're talking about a $700 price difference, that's about 7x points per dollar better. Right. So that's a really nice $500 or $700 to be able to invest. And that's why I think you'll see Mahomes come up in our system based on our projections. I think if it were just a price thing and, you know, you had Roethlisberger in there because it just made the prices work elsewhere and that's just how the math came together, I'd be fine playing him. I mean, he shredded Cincinnati in their earlier meeting this season. Cincinnati, not one of these teams with, you know, their cornerback personnel that can really handle two top-tier wide receivers. And Roethlisberger threw for 370 yards and no interceptions in that game and got a couple touchdowns, vultured too. So I think you could see significant ownership here. And if we wind up playing him, I would feel okay with it. I'd prefer to play Mahomes, better matchup, better quarterback from a fantasy perspective, just as meaningful a game, but I could play Roethlisberger if I needed to.
All right, another team with real big implications here, Chargers on the road against Denver. The Chargers right now are 6.5-point road favorites. They are one of these crazy teams where they sit with the same record as Kansas City, but are some reason fifth in the overall playoff ranking, which is so just really a testament to
how... Yeah, that's just the dumb division winners thing. You know, when they ultimately make the playoffs, they'll be the better team out of... like whoever they play in that wild card round or whatever, they'll be better than them.
So what are they playing for here? They are going to have Melvin Gordon and Eckler back. Are they playing for enough here that you would want to go max opportunity, or does the fact that they're sort of healthier in the run game maybe don't have as much to play for? I mean, what are your thoughts here on the Chargers just as a safe DFS kind of prospect?
I mean, they have to be safe. They could be the number one seed in the AFC. They could get home field advantage, and it's not outrageous. If they win and the Chiefs lose or tie, they are just home field advantage throughout the playoffs. They're going to be playing, they're out of their minds here trying to get this win, because the alternative is falling to the 5 seed and having to play, again, a first round game against a real opponent. So given that these guys are playing at the same time, you can play your Chargers with reckless abandon and assume that they're going to be kind of all in. Now, the real question, though, for me, though, is how this running game comes together, right? I mean, we've seen Melvin Gordon come back. He got 15 touches last week. He was a guy we were looking at an $8,100 price tag. He would have been a unanimous play when he was healthier earlier this season. Now he's $8,100. Do we think they ramp him up in what amounts to... I mean, it's not a must win because you probably can kind of read the tea leaves and assume Kansas City's going to win, but Oakland kind of gave them a fight too. I don't know. Do you trust Gordon here?
Nah, not enough, I don't think. The fact that he's only 2-1 over Jackson last week and getting Eckler back, I think that it's 2-1 really in terms of snaps. I think that I'm just a little worried that they have, that they're already in the playoffs and that they probably recognize the value. I don't know. This one's a tough one.
It's a long shot for them, for KC to lose, but you'd kill yourself if you could have had home. Like, the difference between home field throughout the playoffs and the 5th seed is astronomical in terms of your actual odds to win the Super Bowl. And I think even on the off chance that KC loses, but yeah, I guess Gordon playing, getting all the snaps versus, Eckler getting whatever, 25 or 30% of the snaps or, whatever else, Jackson. I think you wind up not, it doesn't move the needle enough probably that they would wind up risking it. Probably they'll just save him, but I don't know, man, it's pretty tempting. Gordon, very interesting big tournament play because, they'll be watching that scoreboard. If Oakland gets up early, get ready for the Chargers to really invest here.
On the Denver side, Philip Lindsay's out for the season with the wrist injury, so he's not going to come back. Sure looks like Royce Freeman's going to get a lot of the carries. I know they're underdogs. Royce Freeman is the minimum on DraftKings, $3,500. Is there enough? Do you think you get enough usage out of a guy like Freeman, knowing that Devontae Booker is there as well and has caught passes out of the backfield too, and they have split time at running back? But man, that Royce Freeman, even as an underdog, at this such a cheap price, it doesn't take much on the opportunity to kind of get him there. Would you be interested in speculating on him even as a big underdog in this game?
That would be a tough one for me. Denver has shown that their default mode is to have two running backs in play. Freeman and Booker last week each had 8 plays drawn up for them, and that tells me that the plan generally is going to be for a timeshare. Now, these prices are low enough. I mean, a FanDuel too. Freeman and Booker are both $4,700 and $4,500. Yep. That's really cheap, and you can pay that price on half a timeshare kind of without thinking about it. And heaven forbid that Oakland game get out of hand early, KC goes up 20 in the first half. You could definitely see these guys be in line for significant carries. If Denver gets up and they're at home and they just feel like they want to win this game, sure. It's not something I would invest probably in for cash games, but yeah, for big tournaments, I think you can squint and you can see it. And if it was really the only way to make my cash game lineups work, I could live with it.
All right, final game. Let me start that over. 49ers go in and play the Rams. Rams, 10.5-point favorites. It started at -6 and is up to 10.5. Mm-hmm. The significant news here is the biggest news of the week is Todd Gurley has already been ruled out for this game. From a Vegas perspective, it doesn't matter. We've seen that the running backs just don't matter. They're just a huge favorite still. And we saw that CJ Anderson came in basically off the street last week and was the easy DFS play of the day. 20 carries, 100 at his price point. 20 carries, 167 yards, and a touchdown. Fifth outsnapped John Kelly, 51-17. The price did come up a little bit because they just had enough time, I think, on the pricing to have him. But it doesn't really seem like it came up enough. 6,200 on FanDuel, and I'll look it up real quick. 5,400 on DraftKings. And it's worth mentioning too here with CJ Anderson, 3 targets in the passing game. So this is just the Rams. He seems like the Rams guy. Is he like, could you, what do you speculate on his cash game ownership? Are we looking at like 90% cash game now that we have the Gurley news?
Yeah, I think so. The Rams have to win. Like they would be complete fools to not go into this game and do absolutely everything in their power to try to win, given that a 2 seed is on the line. Again, they can make it if the Bears lose or tie. So, yeah, I guess technically they might not need to win this game, but they're not going to put that in the Bears' hands, right? I mean, that would be outrageous with the Bears in a significant game against Minnesota. So, yeah, I think you're going to see CJ Anderson be nearly unanimously played. And I think they could give him an outrageous workload too, because I have to think right now that Gurley will be back for the playoffs, especially if they have a first round bye. So, because, you know, again, his injury is a kind of an ambiguous knee inflammation thing. No specific tears. You know, there's no specific rehab schedule. So I guess it could go either way. But yeah, play Anderson this week. Don't think twice.
And then on the pass catching side, Robert Woods in the lock of the century, lowered him a little bit. And we joked that when we lowered him by half a target going last week that he would catch a first quarter touchdown. That happened. So that was obvious. He went for 6 for 89 and a touchdown in a game that was basically over in the fourth quarter. Brandon Cooks is a guy that our system kind of likes, but I might be a little overboard on the targets. He only had 3 last week. Anything else to like on the passing game? And I do want to talk about the Niners very briefly before we get out of here.
Yeah, so I think the Rams, you know, I've talked about this at length. I think they basically suffer from this tragedy, the common situation where there's a lot of good guys. Again, this should be a game that features a lot of running because they are slated to get up pretty early. And I think they probably hold on to that lead. By the way, you didn't even mention that Robert Woods' first quarter touchdown was a rushing touchdown, which was even just a bigger kick, you know where. So not trying to get the explicit tag, but come on, man. Rushing touchdown. Let's go. But yeah, between him and Cooks, I think it's going to be hard to speculate where those go. And if they get early, they're just going to run.
So okay.
You can play them, but I don't feel like you need to.
Final thoughts here on the Niners. The Niners are going to be without Matt Breida. They're going to be without Marcus Goodwin. They're going to be without Selleck, that doesn't matter as much. They're going to be without Dante Pettis. They are really very, very thin on personnel here. And we've also just seen the 49ers be willing to be one of these teams that just kind of is still kind of trying. Like they're playing. They had a win a couple weeks ago in a game they probably shouldn't have. And they're just still in a situation where they are fine going sort of max effort, even with the personnel they have. And they've also just been able to, at times, operate personnel independent. Like Jeffrey Wilson comes in, gets a lot of carries without Breida. 2-3 weeks ago, he goes in and carries the ball 23 times for 90 yards, gets a reception as well. Carried the ball some against Chicago last week. You can forgive them. It's a very tough matchup. But this team beat the Broncos and the Seahawks in back-to-back weeks. Jeffrey's a guy. I mean, is there enough out of him to see like that he could be cash game relevant? We have seen them willing to give this guy the ball a ton. He's very cheap at 5,800 on FanDuel. He's kind of a guy that's sniffing around line at 4,400 on DraftKings. Is there a case to be made for these 49er guys? And also like some of these pass catchers as well, like Kittle. Like, could we go maybe a little overboard on some of these guys' touches, even in a game that they really don't have to win?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have reasonable enough pay up options in more meaningful spots that you don't need Kittle. Like, I'd probably rather play Kelce there, and I'm not going to play 2 tight ends for sure. I'd be pretty concerned about taking any member of the 49ers offense here, given that it's not too dissimilar a situation from where they were earlier this season. I think it was week 7 or something against the Rams when they got their teeth legitimately kicked in. I mean, they just got utterly obliterated. Bitard was a quarterback at the time. He was terrible, but you know, Mullen is not really like any great shakes either. So like, I don't know, like, aren't you looking at this game and like watching Nick Mullins go out there and just like just get wrecked and like look lost? And I mean, he completed 22 of 38 passes against Chicago last week in a meaningful game against Chicago, and playing against these teams that are actually trying just feels like a different beast. So I'm particularly not interested in the passing game, definitely not for cash. And I think Wilson, like, you can make a strong case for him for big tournaments. Like, he could be the guy who punches in touchdowns and whatnot, but I have no great confidence that any of this is where you would want to be sitting. Again, at 425, like, you're sitting there and you're like, oh yeah, I'm out on a limb with Jeffrey Wilson here in my cash games. here we go. Yeah. Like, that just doesn't sound like fun. So I'm not going to do it.
It's just, it is weird. We have just in the final thought here that we do have some of these very cheap, maybe high opportunity running backs that are just big underdogs. And that's always, it's not really the place you want to land. And you kind of just sometimes need to take the savings when you get guys like, I'm talking like Freeman, Jeffrey Wilson, there's someone else, like even Peyton Barber to some degree. There's just some of these cheap running backs that do end up making things work. And I'm with you that I probably, when it's all said and done, don't really, most likely don't want to be on a limb with any of these guys, considering just how game script could get after. All right, buddy, I think we did it. Whew, mega podcast status. We're up over an hour.
Let's go.
Didn't mention at the top, but dfsr.com/deals will get you, the podcast listener, a 7-day free trial to our projection system. Crushing it in basketball right now. Been great all season long in football. Premium chat. Go over and check it out. You just ask them, how's it going? As being a DFSR member, they will give you their honest opinion, and I feel comfortable giving that because I know they're going to give you positive reviews, and you'll be around with us for the long term. Buddy, enjoy your Sunday of football. We'll be back tomorrow doing a Twitch stream leading into lineup lock, answering as many questions as we can get to for that last, most pivotal hour before lineups lock. Buddy, enjoy your weekend of football.
Will do.